Hello and welcome to the Pain in the Arsenal podcast. My name is Andrew Dalbo. I'll be here with Josh and Henry discussing all the good and bad about Arsenal Football Club. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to Pain in the Arsenal podcast episode 10. After, I guess what I would say is probably the most exciting game of the year. Is that, would you agree with that?
I guess so. I don't know what else to call it, so that's at least a positive way to look at it.
Yes, that is the positive way to spin it. The most exciting game of the year for the neutral, perhaps. From an Arsenal perspective, it was pretty poor for 75 minutes, barring a 5-minute goal spurt and a 15-minute second half. I don't really know how to describe it. sprouting into life, really. Barring that, it was a pretty poor performance from the Gunners. We are obviously talking about the 3-3 draw with Liverpool from Friday night. A very exciting game. Jurgen Klopp said that his side dominated after the final whistle. I tend to agree with that statement. Others may have their own thinking on that. Josh, how do you think, generally speaking, the game went on Friday night?
Oh, man. I mean, you can't be completely disappointed because it is the result that matters, but you know, it was bad enough to give them that 2-goal lead, and then once you take that 3-2, once you take your own 3-2 lead, you really should win that game. Because surrendering that last goal, I'd almost argue that that one hurt the worst, because for once we had the momentum, it felt good, we were doing great, and then it was gone just like that. But I mean, again, I can't be too pessimistic, because it we do get a point, which you could absolutely make the case we didn't necessarily deserve. Although I don't know if I agree with that, though, because two of Liverpool's goals were, one was a deflection and one was a poor save by Cech. And you could say that Xhaka's was also a poor save by Mignolet, but by that, if you want to go by that, then it was 2-1 on legitimate goals, if you really want to be nitpicky about it. But again, they did control possession. They did put the pressure on, and they made us look really stupid sometimes. So yeah. 3-3 is fine. I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal did score the same amount of goals, and Liverpool obviously scored a deflected goal and a poor save by Cech, but they also had 9 shots on target, and Arsenal only had 4. And I can't even remember what the fourth one was. Can you?
I think they counted the one where Ozil's bizarre looping thing from way off on the touchline was about to sneak under the bar and Mignolet tipped it over.
And Mignolet popped it over.
That might have been
right.
It.
Well, yes. So it wasn't the most...
Actually, no, that wasn't it. It was Bellerin's effort, which I don't even think was going to be on target, because I thought it was going over the crossbar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, let's be honest, it wasn't the most free-flowing of Arsenal attacking performances, bar a 5-minute... spurt. I guess the first place to start here really is on the defence. And, well, it's not the most positive place to start, but probably the most concerning. How worried were you after Liverpool carved them open for the first goal? And did you see such haphazard defending being the culprit for Arsenal on Friday night?
Yeah, it was throughout the game. I mean, damn, it looked like the 4-0 loss all over again. It's just this time they didn't punish us as badly. It was it wasn't even just the individual mistakes. It wasn't the poor mental mistakes. It was just the defense as a whole didn't look like they knew where they were supposed to be, what they were doing. There was no shape to it. It was bizarre.
Yeah, it was a little bit, it was confusingly terrible, I think is how I would describe it. It was so bad that it was actually quite unfathomable how it got to this point. Because I think Arsenal have always been bad at defending, but this was extremely bad. This was really, really, really bad. Just some of the mental positional errors. I mean, for the second goal, where Salah plays it to Roberto Firmino, and three players run towards the ball, and then Salah just kind of wanders in behind them. I mean, it was terrible. And then when he does get the ball, nobody charges him down and allows him a free shot at goal that obviously gets deflected and goes in. It's just, it's not that they're making kind of tactical errors, although I think they are, because there are no tactics, really, or at least no tactics that I can see. It's the mentality, the complacency, the decision-making is so poor. And these are experienced, established, seasoned pros. Koscielny and Monreal have been at Arsenal for 5-6 years, something like that. They're both over 30. They're both internationals. They've played many, many, many Premier League games against good teams and have played well. But they just didn't know what they were doing. It was an absolute nightmare.
And I was going to say, I think it's Koscielny that I think has really snuck up on us. I mean, this was our most reliable player for probably for the past 3-4 years. And now all of a sudden it's like we're just praying he doesn't screw up any worse than he just did. And I think there was one instance in particular where they sent in a free kick and Koscielny tracked back to cover his guy and nobody else moved back. And Liverpool almost scored. And I don't remember if it was Arlo White or Lee Dixon that said, that's a situation where somebody like Koscielny should be getting in the face of his teammates, scolding them for not paying attention. Well, he just kind of loafed away like, oh, well, I did my job. And maybe that's part of the problem is there's no, without Mustafi out there especially, I don't know if there's a leader. And gosh, we've gotten back to this theme again of leadership. And I wonder if that's not the problem, though.
I just don't know what the problem is. I really don't know where to start. Koscielny was very poor in this game. He's been poor for a few weeks. But I don't think it's necessarily fair to pin it on him. Like, I don't think it's fair to pin it on any individual, because collectively they were all so poor, and defending is a team game. It always has been, it always will be. And you can't be a good defender in a situation like Arsenal's, because everybody else around you is either out of position or giving the ball away or falling over or just going mad. It's just ridiculous. I mean, what Koscielny was doing when the pass was played to for Salah and it ended up in the one-on-one. And I mean, it looked to me as if he was close enough to just step across and intercept the ball, firstly. If I'm wrong, then which obviously Koscielny thinks I am, then he made the slide tackle to try and intercept it. He then kicks the ball. He actually has contact with the ball, but knocks it back towards goal somehow, quite impressively actually, into the path of Salah, who is then one-on-one with Petr Cech. It's just incredibly bad. Incredibly bad. And I think I have to pin it on Wenger, at least in terms of the lack of tactics, the lack of strategy, the lack of instruction that he's given his players, and also in the assembly of the squad. You know, Wenger is the player, is the manager, sorry, who has the sole influence of the players that are bought and sold at Arsenal Football Club. And if these players aren't good enough, then that is Wenger's fault and nobody else. It's not the player's fault if he isn't good enough. That's the nature of being talented. You either have it or you don't. That's not necessarily your fault. It's Wenger's responsibility to be able to highlight that talent and then acquire that talent and make sure that it is proper talent, not just useless defenders like Arsenal have got at the moment.
But I think the problem with that, and I agree with you, I do think that there should be more talent in this club, but I think the problem with that argument is these are players that we've seen be perfectly talented before. I mean, we've often talked about Koscielny being the best defender in the Premier League. Now all of a sudden he's not good enough. And I mean, I think that you can look at him selling Gabriel and say, well, you probably should have at least kept him to prepare for this, because Koscielny is getting old, and I mean, we should have anticipated that at some point this might happen. I didn't think it would happen this quickly and this severely, and now I think it's my big question is, what's he going to do about it? I mean, you've got Callum Chambers and Rob Holding, who I think are both doing as much as they possibly can, and I wonder how long it takes for one of them to get in. The problem is I don't think they're going to get in. I think that Arsene Wenger, in his infinite supply of faith, has seen what Koscielny's done over the past 3 years and is going to use that to keep him in there, despite the fact that recently he's been terrible.
Yeah, and I don't know if putting Chambers or Holding in would necessarily be a good thing. I think they would individually be better than Koscielny has been playing, but I think the issues are more rounded than just plugging in different players at different positions. There's no protection from the midfield whatsoever, so I think you could put Nesta and Maldini at centre-half and they'd have been ripped to shreds, because there's no structure in the team. The fullbacks are getting pulled this way and that by the wingers. The defensive midfield is Granit Xhaka and essentially nobody else, which, A, Xhaka's pants, and B, you've got to give him some support in there. So I think you could put Chambers and Holding in there, and it would be nice to see, and I guess, I mean, how much worse could it be?
That's what I was going to say, could you do worse?
Yeah. But really, this, for me anyway, the issues are more deep-rooted than just this player isn't playing well, that player isn't playing well. There is either a tactical shortage, a cultural shortage, I'm not sure, but there's an issue that is more than just the players aren't good enough. Because we have seen these players play well, and they're not playing well at the moment.
No, I agree. I don't want to pin this all on Koscielny. I just... No. Of the players that I saw, I think the biggest fall from grace is Koscielny. In times like these where you're crumbling, you look to the guys that have lifted you before, and he's one of those guys, and he hasn't been there to do that for us lately.
Yeah. And he's also the captain. Which,
yeah, that too.
Which, you know, he has a responsibility of leadership on his shoulders, and, well, let's just say he's not leading them very well.
No.
On the lack of tactics, I want to ask you a slightly facetious but actually extremely accurate question. What does Wenger actually do in training?
That if anyone had the answer to that, it would be like solving the greatest riddle of all time. Because, you know, people post this on Twitter all the time. They post it on Facebook. And it's always seen as a joke. But I don't think anybody is ever really joking when they ask. Because...
No.
Like you said, when you see the same problems recurring all the time with different players, you have to look somewhere higher up. And today was probably the worst excuse for tactics I've ever seen in a big game. I mean, you're at home against a team that beat you 4-0. And what was the objective? I feel like he just told his players, okay, you've got talent. Yeah, exactly. You've got talent. Off
you
go. Yeah. I'll be over here if you need me, but don't ask me anything too complicated. It's like...
Smile and wave, boys. as they fly past you.
I don't get it. I don't... There was not... I mean, aside from those beautiful 5 minutes, I mean, maybe Arsene Wenger's strategy is keep passing the ball around and hope that somebody strikes gold. Which I don't need to tell you is a terrible strategy, but I don't get it. And you've heard people make the claim before that Arsene Wenger is a great man manager, but he's not a tactician, and he's not. And I'm wondering if I'm starting to see that more and more, because I've always supported Wenger. I've always wanted to believe that he still has what it takes to win us something big, but. I don't know. Every time I feel like we've gotten somewhere, I feel like as soon as we take that big step, we take another step backwards and we're back where we started.
Yeah, and I will always be a Wenger-in man.
Yeah, me too.
Arsenal could be relegated 5 times and I'll still want Wenger to stay. Partly out of selfish loyalty to him. Not necessarily because he is better for the club. I think actually for the betterment of the club, it's probably time he leaves, but I still want him to stay. I guess that's what fandom is all about, really. You illogically support something irrespective of rationale or thinking or any numbers or science that you can throw at it. And I guess that's where I'm at with Wenger, really. I can't really ascribe any logic to his thinking because there doesn't seem to be any. And Friday was just another example. Let's be clear here. Arsenal may have drawn this game, but really they were outplayed for a lot of it, especially the first half. At half-time, Gary Neville said on Sky Sports that this game should have been out of sight. And actually, Arsene Wenger said the same thing at full-time. He said we were lucky to be in the game at half-time, which very rarely do you hear Wenger say something so frank and so honest.
Yeah.
So he clearly realised it was a pretty shocking performance, or first 45-minute performance anyway.
But what's going to change? I mean, I'm glad that he said that, but I would not be surprised if nothing changes, because it really does.
No, I feel like I was having this conversation 10 years ago at school. Like, it doesn't feel any different. In fact, it just feels like a perpetual repetition of the same mistakes every single time. And the one constant is Wenger. So he does have an unrivaled influence and power at the club, unlike any other manager in world football. And that means that while he gets to take the glory for the successes that he's had, he also has to take the blame for the failures. And at the moment, there are quite a lot of failures and flaws with this club that I think, if not directly, indirectly, lie at the feet of Arsene Wenger. Let's move on slightly and look at some players. I mean, it's not going to get more positive, I'm afraid. Let's look at some players who played terribly. We already discussed Koscielny a little bit, so we will not delve into him again. Let's look at poor old Alex Iwobi. For me, and I think the general thinking on this is probably agreed with me, Alex Iwobi was the worst player on the pitch, perhaps other than Simon Mignolet. He was the worst Arsenal player on the pitch, and he was pretty terrible. Would you agree with that?
I mean, yeah. I was trying to think of something clever to say, but there's nothing clever enough to express how bad he was. He was, I haven't seen so many bad passes played in such close proximity to each other. And keep in mind, I watch Granit Xhaka constantly just to prove people wrong, and I see him play some bad passes, but nothing like what I saw Iwobi do today.
There were some bad ones. There were some bad ones.
I was doing my note-taking while I was watching the game, where I take notes for each player. And normally I'll just jot down nice little notes of what they did. And Iwobi's is just... I won't read it because it's full of nasty things. Needless to say, I've never written anything like that about a player before. He was... Oh, man. It's like...
Iwobi took Josh to dark, dark depths.
He really did. I came out of that game with a headache, and all I could think about was Alex Iwobi passing the ball and then stomping his foot and jumping up and down like a tantrum. It was, man, and I think the worst part about it, if this was like Yaya Sanogo doing that, I'd be like, well, we know he sucks. The worst part about it is that we've seen how good Iwobi can be, and that's what I think really pushes it even further. It kind of like the whole Koscielny thing, where Koscielny wasn't as bad as everyone else out there. But we've seen how good he can be, and that's what I think really sucks with Iwobi, is he's been so good, and today he screwed up in the one area he's supposed to be really good at, which is passing. And it felt like as soon as he had an ounce of pressure on him, he just crapped his pants and passed the ball away, like he wanted nothing to do with the game. And I don't know, I mean... The passes are literally replaying in my head. I can't remember many specifics about the game, but I can remember at least four times where I watched him pass the ball away and then jump up and down and flail his arms and stomp. That's all I want to say about him. I can't
it was not a good performance from Iwobi. And we've seen him have confidence issues in the past, and I am somewhat worried that if he dropped and dropped for a long time, this could be quite a difficult game for Iwobi to overcome in the future. It could definitely play on his mind somewhat.
I think Theo Walcott's coming back.
He came on.
He had a really nice turn. I guess it might have been on Robertson, but it was beautiful. And it was, yeah. I think it was the only thing he did, but one for one, you know, it was better than what Iwobi did in 75, 80 minutes, however long he was on.
Yeah, Theo came on. I'm always happy. I'm fighting for Theo now. I want him to do well.
Be careful. I tried that against West Ham. I was really rooting for him, and it was the worst game ever. But...
Gosh, he was bad. He was nearly as bad as Iwobi.
No. No, he wasn't. Nobody's that bad. This was horrible.
Let's move on to another player who wasn't very good. Alexis Sanchez. There was a moment after about 15 minutes where he lost the ball and he scampered after the Liverpool player. I think it might have been Jordan Henderson who he lost the ball to. But he scampered after the Liverpool player and went kind of running after the ball like his old self. And he actually gave away the foul. He didn't win the ball back and he fouled the Liverpool player. But his attitude was right. You could see straight away that he was really committed. But his quality was far, far away from the Emirates on Friday night. He did not play well at all. Now, he did score the goal, and it was a good header, and it was a good run that Joe Gomez was sleeping on.
Yeah.
But really, it was the only good thing he did for much of the game, I would say. Is that fair?
Yeah, I it kind of reminds me, like, whenever he first came to Arsenal, he had that four-month stretch or so where it was just, like, everything he touched turned to gold, and no defense had any answer for him. And then they kind of figured him out because he was doing the same kind of thing over and over, and he struggled. I feel like he's now stuck in that perpetual state of he can't figure out defenses, and he keeps trying the same thing. He always dribbles in, and he'll turn back, and he'll do his little juke move around a defender, but all he does is get further away from goal. And you know, I imagine if there was no such thing as goals and the objective was to just keep the ball away from defenders with fancy footwork, he'd be great. But
he's brilliant. A little bit like El Nene is good at passing sideways. Alexis Sanchez is incredible at running in circles with the ball.
And quick just, circles, too.
Very, very quick circles. If you just put him kind of in a barrel and a ball, he would be phenomenal.
he's got tremendous equilibrium because he never falls over.
No, his balance is outstanding.
Yeah, but that he does deserve a ton of credit for that goal because he wanted it. And in a game like that where we were down and out, for him to really want it, I think speaks a lot to his character. At least I want it to. I'm trying to find something positive to say about him because that just, without that goal, he would have been right down there with Iwobi on my nightmare list. He just, but for Alexis's case, this is what he's been like recently, unfortunately. Maybe not to this extreme, but he's been this bad for quite some time.
Yes, he has been very bad. That's fair to say. I think the one telling stat for me, obviously, his pass completion rate was 60%, which is, well, it's shocking. But Alexis Sanchez always has a low pass completion rate. He's very rarely above 70, to be honest. So I'm not that concerned. The one that concerns me is one dribble, which is not very good. And I've got some kind of dribbling statistics. So these are all per game. So, this season in the Premier League, he's made 1.9 dribbles per game. Not especially fantastic, but fairly average. Last season in the Champions League, that was 2.8, and in the Premier League, that was 2.9. The season before in the Champions League, it was 6.3. In the Premier League, it was 3.4. And in the Copa America for Chile, it was 3.8. The season before that in the Champions League, it was 4.1. And in the Premier League, it was 3.3, and then we get into his Barca numbers, which are all around the 1.5 mark. So Sanchez is making less dribbles than he ever has done per game, nearly a dribble less per game, in some cases 3 or 4 dribbles per game less. That's really worrying, especially considering that driving at defenders, skipping past them, committing them to tackles that they don't want to make and then thereby creating space for other players, that's what he brings to this Arsenal team, that electric spark where he can just fly past a couple of challengers. There aren't really many players in this Arsenal team that can actually do that, and he isn't doing it at this moment in time. And I've noticed over the last few games, Arsenal don't really beat players. You look at Mane and Firmino and Coutinho and Salah tonight, they were running past the Arsenal defenders with relative ease. And you contrast that, I mean, how many times did Mesut Ozil get easily just kind of shouldered off the ball by Emre Can or Dejan Lovren? And I don't think that's necessarily Ozil's fault. That's not his game. He's not a sharp, quick dribbler. He's a passer, he's a distributor, he's a creator. But Arsenal don't really have that type of player who can pick up the ball like an Eden Hazard, like a past Alexis Sanchez, like a Riyad Mahrez, let's say, or, I don't know, a Leroy Sané or something, who can pick up the ball and beat 2 or 3 players. And I think tonight it was especially evident, and especially evident from Sanchez as well. Is that something that you would agree with?
Yeah, I mean, and it's sad because Alexis did used to be that guy, and I don't know, I mean, it's hard to, because you never question the work ethic of Alexis Sanchez. You could put him on the worst team in the world, he'd still be fighting out there all the time. I just feel like it's got to come down to his mental state, maybe not wanting to be here. And, you know, we talk about this all the time, about how that has to be the key difference, because what else has changed between him coming to Arsenal and now? It's his desire to be here, which just isn't there anymore. And, I mean, those numbers are telling, those dribbling numbers, because that's such a big part of who he was. And he's, I mean, they're back down to Barcelona numbers, which is, at Barcelona, he was just the supporting cast guy. He wasn't the superstar that he was at Arsenal. And now it feels like he's kind of fallen back into that again. I mean, you look at even his goals and assist numbers, he's a supporting cast again. He's not the standout guy. He's not the superstar. He's just one of the guys.
And even if you add a bit of context, his key passes per game are around the same, if not improved. He's making 2.8 in the Premier League this year. Last year, he only made 2.1. His shots per game are exactly the same at 3.4. So it's not as if he's not having an impact in other areas. It's specifically his goals and assist output and his dribbling. And for Arsenal, that was, like you said, when he was the main man, that was his biggest benefit that he added to this team, was the ability to create something out of nothing. And at the moment, he doesn't have it, which is somewhat sad to say.
Yeah.
Anything else on Sanchez?
No. I find myself getting sadder every time I talk about him, so I might as well just cut my losses and not talk about
him. Yeah. Me too. Let's talk about something else that was somewhat negative. I'm afraid that's the type of show it's going to be today, guys.
We'll find some positives. We'll find some.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, that's your job, really.
I'm honest. I'm on it.
Arsenal, our team, I wrote in the 5 things we learned that Arsenal have never been good at defending, and it's not surprising that they defended so poorly tonight. What they have been good at is passing. The issue is tonight they're not very good at passing either. I'm just going to read out the pass completion rates from every player. These are pretty ugly. So Petr Cech was 48%. That's not good. Bellerin was 76%. Koscielny 74%. Monreal 92%. But he was taken off at half time. But that is alright. Maitland-Niles 88%. Xhaka 77%. Wilshere 79%. Alexis Sanchez 60%. Ozil 83%. Iwobi 67%. And Lacazette 62%. Usually Arsenal will have at least one or two defensive midfielders up around the 90% mark. They don't have any over 80. Ozil will usually be up around the 90% mark. All the defenders will be up in and around the 85 to 90% mark as well. And Alex Iwobi at 67, he's usually up around the 85 to 90% mark as well. this is just a team that couldn't keep hold of the ball, and it was really, really clear, especially in the first half. Liverpool just completely dominated the game because they were winning the ball back so quickly.
Yeah, and I think one of the problems too was there no, especially when the ball was deep down in the Arsenal half, there weren't a lot of outlets provided. I can think of a few times, one with Bellerin, one with Koscielny, and a couple with Xhaka, where they had the ball, they had two guys on them, but there was nobody around them to give the ball to. So they ended up just having to pump the ball upfield and hope for the best. And, you know, especially when Koscielny got it, Koscielny got it, and immediately all of his teammates just bombed upfield as if he had this amazing ability to put it right on their foot. Nobody waited around to see if he needed help, and he had two guys on him. And you could hear even the crowd was getting irritated with this, and Koscielny, while he had the ball, threw up his arms and just hoofed the ball and gave it right back. But, I mean, you can't blame them for that. If they have the ball and there's nobody there to provide an outlet, what are they going to do with it? They either try something fancy, which they absolutely should not be doing, and risk losing the ball, or you just bomb it downfield, which, with our lack of aerial presence, is going to end up in the exact same thing, just further down the field. We're going to lose possession.
Yeah, it's definitely a collective problem,
yeah,
both in terms of the distribution and the options to distribute to.
But that doesn't account... I mean, that was a handful of times, and I'm sure there was more that didn't stick in my mind where that happened. But, I mean, I find it baffling because a huge part of Arsenal's game is just passing the ball in a semicircle around the opposing goal, waiting for something to happen, which usually bolsters the hell out of those passing numbers, but they didn't have the chance to do that today.
No.
And maybe that was what gave them the culture shock that completely blasted their formation, if they ever had one, because they didn't have the time that they love to take. And I don't know why they would have ever thought they would have that time, though, because Liverpool's not the kind of team that's going to give you that kind of time.
No, and we talked about that before the game, didn't we, that this team struggles against opposition that presses high up the pitch,
yeah,
because they lack essentially someone like a Santi Cazorla who can receive the ball under pressure, spin, turn into space, and then begin to play passes out from that position. And I would say Jack Wilshere was probably the better of the Arsenal players in that the passing element, in the sense that he was able to, a couple of times, shake away from a tackle and at least alleviate a little bit of pressure. But I wouldn't say he was necessarily good at it. He was just less bad.
Which, in this game, is an accomplishment, though. And that's...
Yes.
In my player ratings, I even said Jack Wilshere, I wanted to see him do more. But the fact that he didn't... There were no points where I was cursing at him made me think, well, he couldn't have been that bad. Because he wasn't a liability. There were a few times where he tried extra hard and lost the ball. I don't always mind that as much if you're going to try to do something when nothing's happening. But no, I think he was solid all around. And he is supposed to be that Cazorla type, though. I mean, he's always been... I know I've talked about him being a potential successor to Santi Cazorla by being able to wriggle out of tight spaces and make something out of it. And like you said, I didn't see that as much today.
Yeah, well, that leads us quite nice, actually. Let's discuss the midfield shape. If you look at the average starting positions, or the average, not starting positions, just the average positions of each player after the game, you'll see a kind of rough 4-2-3-1 formation with Iwobi on the right and Ozil as the central attacking midfielder. It didn't really feel like that, did it?
No, I thought it looked more like a 4-3-3 at times, especially in the second half when... It was less painful to watch. It felt like it was Xhaka and then Ozil to his left, Wilshere to his right, and then Alexis Lacazette, Iwobi in front of them. But there's really no set formation.
No, there was no shape. There was no shape at all.
I mean, there were times where Xhaka was the number 10 and Alexis and Ozil were behind him. There wasn't any...
There were a couple of breaks where I saw where Xhaka was next to Lacazette. Maybe that's not Wenger's fault. Maybe that's Xhaka's fault. Maybe that's, I don't know, Jack Wilshere's fault because he's not high enough up the pitch. I don't know. But whoever's fault that is,
it's a big fault.
Yeah, it's It's not good. It's not good.
Yeah, I've talked before about how I don't know if a rigid formation is always that necessary, but you got to have some kind of structure, and they didn't today. There was absolutely nothing, not midfield, defense, attack, nothing. I mean, you could even see Lacazette falling back in the midfield. I think that was just because he was frustrated that nobody seemed to be able to find him, but there was nothing, no structure at all.
No, there wasn't. And you contrast it to the Manchester City midfield, for example, and I know you've got different quality of player, but just in terms of the shape that they adopt and the clear, mindful instruction that every single individual has been given and the ability to then execute that instruction, it's completely and utterly different. It looks like they're playing a different sport. The City players know exactly what they are doing on that pitch, and they know why they are doing it and how it helps the collective midfield. Arsenal are the complete opposite.
I think you could have just stopped and said Manchester City players know exactly what they are, because I think that's something that Arsenal players don't understand. I don't think Iwobi, Maitland-Niles, I don't think they have any clue what they are or what they're supposed to be doing, and I don't know if Wenger knows either. I feel like it's just a constant science experiment where he kind of the same thing is what this team tries to do, where he just tries to strike gold. Maybe if he puts a player in a new role, he'll discover something great. But that doesn't showcase you as a manager. That showcases your ability to play the odds, and most of the time it doesn't work. And
do you think that's what we could be, just in this science experiment of, I wonder how foolish these fans could be to think that change could come after how long will they wait?
And maybe
they started it in 2006 and they were thinking, well, there's no way they'll wait more than a year, and here we are 11 years later and these fans are still futile rocking up to the stadium hoping for change. Certainly what it feels like to be an Arsenal fan.
It does. It's like we're living in a bubble, and I feel like it just feels so. Every other team goes through so many changes. When something doesn't work, they change. And there's a certain beauty to consistency and loyalty. Not in this form, though. This is not the kind of consistency and loyalty that
to
you
a
want.
Fault.
Yeah, and kind of to go off on a random tangent here, but with Arsene Wenger saying about the January window that he needs to have faith in the players that we have, we've had that faith for 5 years. These are the same people. What is the faith going to do now that it hasn't done before?
There is a definite stale element to the squad, isn't there?
Absolutely. And it's, it's bad whenever you're celebrating 5 minutes of brilliance because that's all your team could muster of brilliance. Yeah. The rest of it was just awful.
Yeah, I know I opened the podcast by saying this was one of the most exciting games of the season. I'm starting to think that may have been a slight error of judgment.
My goal before the end of this podcast is to turn my negative attitude around and make this draw a positive.
Right, okay. Well, let's talk about somebody who you are somewhat more positive about than many others. Granit Xhaka. I thought he was absolutely terrible. I thought he was awful. I've seen Xhaka play badly, and I think this was the worst he's ever played. And the general consensus, the Arsenal cognoscenti kind of agrees with me.
Yeah, but they always hate Xhaka.
They do always hate Xhaka. They do always hate Xhaka, mostly justifiably. But you, Josh, think otherwise. So I'll give you the floor to defend Mr. Granit Xhaka.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, first off, the first 45 minutes, you're right. He was absolutely terrible. I had him right there with Iwobi and Alexis. The only difference was I think Iwobi and Alexis seemed like they were in a hurry to give the ball away, whereas Xhaka was fine taking his time giving the ball away. but that said, I've watched a lot. As soon as the game was over, I actually watched a lot of the second half highlights that I could find, because I throughout the game I felt like I saw a change in Xhaka, and I was trying to make sure that I wasn't just being my typical biased Granit Xhaka supporter, who, like you said, as a Granit Xhaka fan, I will support him blindly no matter what. But I really do believe that and this isn't the only time that I've seen this, that when he came out in the second half, it was completely different. He didn't give the ball away. I mean, I'm sure he did a couple times, but not nearly as blatantly as he did in the first half. And the one time he did give it away, he tracked back and won it back, which to me erases the mistake. Not maybe not completely, but at least the majority of it. But I think the bigger impact that he had was, if you watch every goal that was scored, obviously he scored one of them. And if you want to say bad keeping by Mignolet, that's fine. But he still had to put the ball where it was, and it still had to be a threat to their goal, and it was. He provided that. But the other two goals, he played a key role in the build-up. I mean, for the Bellerin, when Bellerin crossed it into Alexis, it was
the little back heel thing.
Yeah, he did a back heel to Lacazette that then found Bellerin, that then found Alexis. And if you look at the Ozil goal, Xhaka had the ball. He was surveying his options. He spotted Ozil's run. He curved the ball around to him. They played the 1-2 and scored. So he was god-awful in the first half, but he finished so strong. We don't have that comeback without Granit Xhaka. He had a lot of discipline, especially in that last goal, to not just go sit forward like he had been doing throughout the first half, which, again, I don't understand why he feels the need to start so far forward when it's when it's important for him to be back there with his passing ability. But, I mean, and even defensively, he had a few clumsy moments, again, though, mostly in the first half. He won the ball back pretty cleanly in the second half. It doesn't erase how bad the first half was, but if you give me the choice between having a really good first half and then just falling off the face of the earth in the second, or having a bad first half, learning from it, and coming out stronger in the second, obviously you're taking the second one, because it's not always... I'd rather you finish strong and start bad than start strong and finish bad. Yeah, because... to add to that, I didn't see a lot of other people stepping up in the second half. I don't think Bellerin got any better. I don't think Wilshere stayed the same. He was the same decent quality throughout. It will be sure as hell didn't get any better. Xhaka did get better. He got a lot better. And again, I don't think that erases all the mistakes he did make in the first half. But when nobody else was stepping up in the second half, he did. And to me, that definitely counts for something.
I think they're all fair points. I think his playing the goal, I mean, I give him no credit for the second goal at all, because I actually said out loud, "Don't shoot," about a second before he shot. And I know it went in, and people are like, "Oh, great shot, well done." But we've seen throughout the year, he does that every time, and it never goes in. So I'm not going to give him any credit, because most of the time...
You have to give him some credit. He scored.
I know, I'm not going to give him any. I know he shot and it went on goal, but like...
So who gets credit for that goal?
Mignolet has to save it.
100%. 100% falls on Mignolet.
It wasn't even that good a shot. It was down the middle.
No, but it was at least on target. It was in the air and it made him do something. I mean, you could say that the check was terrible on the third save that Firmino, I believe it was Firmino, scored.
Yeah.
But he doesn't score that if he doesn't put it on target and
make
check.
Yeah, but the difference is, in Firmino's case, you give him that shot, and I would say 6-7 times out of 10, he scores. In Xhaka's case, you give him that shot, maybe one time out of 100, he scores. Well,
but
maybe
this was
maybe
that one time.
Yeah, maybe if Mignolet's in net, he scores 100 times out of 100. But that's by the by. So I give him maybe I give him a little bit of credit, but I give that's him very bad. Little. I give him very little credit for that goal. My main issue is I don't really want him creating goals. Like that's not what he's in the team to do. And now that may not be his fault, because he may not be the defensive midfielder that Arsenal need. But nonetheless, Arsenal need a defensive midfielder, and I think he needs to have the experience and the understanding to recognise that and say, do you know what? I'm going to be a different player to what perhaps I think I am, and I'm going to be the midfield anchor destroyer that Wenger is asking me to do, even if that isn't the job that I'm best suited to.
But I don't think Wenger is asking him to do that job. Otherwise,
perhaps
he wouldn't.
Not. Perhaps not.
Because I think that he... And I agree. I don't think he should be the one that's creating goals. That's not what it seems like he should be doing. But he should be facilitating the attacks. He should be the one that starts it. And he did that in the second half, at least. And I mean, I feel like Arsene Wenger's intention with him was the same as it was with Ramsey, the same as it is with Wilshere. He recognizes somebody that can create, that can be a threat to goal, and he starts him in a deep position without any intention of them having any defensive impact on the game, because he said so many times before he doesn't like having a midfielder that's only defensive. And yeah, I don't think that it's fair to classify him as a defensive midfielder and harp on his lack of defending, because he really is not a defender. Whenever I don't think that that's his role to play, and I don't think that that's what's being asked of him.
It feels like Mikel Arteta all over again.
Oh, you keep
me,
saying
to be honest.
This is
what it feels like. This is I can't, when I watch him, I know he's a very different player to Mikel Arteta in the sense that he's a bit bigger and he's solely left-footed and he plays slightly differently to Mikel Arteta. But it feels like Wenger is trying to make a passer be a anchorman. And
the situation is similar, but the players are vastly, vastly different. I'm not sure they are.
I've been a Xhaka defender for a long time. I've been pro Xhaka, but I've just had enough. I've had enough of him trying to run. I've had enough of him not using his right foot and turning round for a year to get it on his left foot before he passed the ball. I've had enough of him doing these limp across the field passes straight to Sadio Mane. I've had enough of him. I've just had enough. I've got to the point. It's now 12:20, and I've had enough of Granit Xhaka. And I just, it's just, it's got to that point. I'm sorry, Xhaka, but I've just, you need to go. Well, no, maybe you don't need to go. You need to be replaced.
Perhaps Josh. Who?
Well, ideally, a flashy new toy in the January transfer market.
Because that's going to happen.
Yes, unfortunately, I realise that isn't going to happen. I'd love N'Golo Kante, but obviously, you know.
Well, who wouldn't?
I mean, Wenger, predictably, has nearly signed him twice.
Of course, yeah.
And I think he's also nearly signed everybody else, but there we go. Let's talk about someone who was slightly more positive. Ezzy Maitland-Niles. I thought he played poorly in the first 20 to 25 minutes. Positionally especially, I thought he really struggled. There were two or three crosses from the opposite wing that floated over his head. One to Roberto Firmino and another to, I think, Dejan Lovren, I can't quite remember, where he was just all out of position. He didn't even know the player was behind him. And obviously for the first goal, he didn't do very well either. As soon as Arsenal won the ball, firstly he stepped up, which is the wrong thing to do. He also then stepped inside, which is the other wrong thing to do, and and completely vacated the channel for Mohamed Salah to run in. And you're leaving Koscielny in a one-on-one situation with Salah, and it's just not going to go very well. And actually, I think Koscielny did pretty decently in that scenario, given the vulnerability that he was exposed to. But after that 20-25 minutes, and especially in the second half, I thought Maitland-Niles did pretty well. I think defending against Salah is one of the toughest tasks you can be asked to do in the Premier League these days, and I thought for the most part he was pretty good.
Yeah, and I was talking after the game about how I really didn't feel that threatened by Salah. The big problem with Maitland-Niles, as you mentioned already, was his positioning. Mm. But, and I'm going to go back to something Arsene Wenger said earlier in the week whenever they asked him if he had any hesitations with playing Ainsley Maitland-Niles against Mohamed Salah. And he said no, because that's what Wenger does. And then he said, I don't have the exact quote, but I know he said, the great thing about Maitland-Niles is he's versatile. He can play left back, right back, central midfield. And he said, in fact, of all his positions, I think left back is his worst one. So that's why he's still playing
He plays left back.
Yeah, which just, there's so many things wrong with that string of logic. But
And he's playing next to Nacho Monreal.
Who is
a left back.
Who is a left back.
Playing center half.
That said, while he was positionally poor at times, when he was matched up one-on-one with Salah, he had no problems.
No.
He does not get thrown off the ball. He doesn't get thrown off the scent when Salah does a step over, a fancy move. He doesn't bite on that kind of stuff, which I think is fantastic, especially for a 20-year-old. That said, he still shouldn't be playing left back. Arsene Wenger said it himself. That's his worst position, but you're still playing him there. And I just want to touch on this point one more time. I think I said it last podcast. Why, if he's better at right back, haven't you sat Bellerin, who's been doing far worse than Kolasinac? It's just so far beyond me. I don't know. I'm just sitting here shaking my head. I don't have any words anymore. It's just I don't understand that logic. But all of that said, Maitland-Niles did do well.
I mean, the one thing we've not said, he's right-footed. Like, come on!
Which is key for when you're playing strictly on the left side of the field.
Yeah, think, Wenger. God, oh my gosh, you're playing two right footers on the left hand side. It's just incredible. It's stupid. It's very, very stupid. But there we go. The maddening tendencies of Arsene Wenger. They will continue to frustrate me and confuse me for many, many years. I do think Maitland-Niles, on the most part, played well. I really like he's kind of got a kind of ratty attitude to himself, where he just kind of, because he's very quick, both in terms of his range across quite large spaces, and also in terms of his turning circle, his agility and his balance. He's quite a sharp turner, and he kind of just rats around. He must be a nightmare to play against. Because he's always kind of biting away at your ankles, like, and I kind of quite like that.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what Arsenal do not have. Again, perhaps replace Granit Xhaka with Ainsley Maitland-Niles. I'd be quite happy with that.
Over Alex Iwobi, you could put Maitland-Niles in for Alex Iwobi. We could just have a happy game here. But you got to go after Xhaka again.
Well, I mean, I'd rather play 10 men than play with Alex Iwobi and give it his form from Friday night. I think that's one of the most disappointing things for me was we've seen it reminded me quite a lot of the 7-5 loss win against Reading a few years ago. Apart from that was the youth team and you kind of expect it from the youth team. These are kind of experienced seasoned professionals. These are the best players that Arsenal have got. Really, irrespective if you kind of ignore the injuries to Ramsey and Kolasinac and Giroud. Other than maybe Kolasinac and Mustafi, this was basically Arsenal's best 11. There aren't, you know, you look at the squad and you say, well, who comes in for who? There aren't many players who I think, oh, I can't believe he didn't play. And that's quite concerning, really. In fact, it's very concerning.
I was going to say it's very concerning. I don't know what could be more concerning than realizing that the best you can put out there isn't good enough.
The fact that they can't pass might be.
Yeah, that's... And you know, this was a game, especially speaking to Iwobi, this was a game that I thought would play to his strengths. Because I didn't see how... passing is his thing, and he's got very quick feet. He uses those quick feet, kind of like what we were talking about before, often like a Cazorla type, to find space. And then from there, he makes a good pass. I don't know what... Maybe it was just the pressure got to him this time around, but it was... not a pretty sight.
No, not a pretty sight at all. Well, this has been a depressing show. Is there any optimism that you want to throw on the fire?
I would love to.
Have you got any?
I do. Yes, absolutely.
All right. Oh, wonderful.
Since we did the three terrible players, I'm gonna anoint myself the one to give us the three positive players, and I'm even going to throw in a bonus player.
Positive player. Or just less bad?
For right now, let's just say positive.
read less bad, or listen, should I say, listen as less bad, but go on.
Mesut Ozil, he wasn't his same self. He only created one chance. But I think the key for Ozil, you know, when Klasnik got on his really good run, I've always said that I think what makes Klasnik really special is his bad games are still good. They're not as great as he can be, but he doesn't really have a bad game. And I think in that article, I actually mentioned Ozil as the example of somebody who's either good
or bad. The complete opposite. Yeah.
But this game, while it wasn't Ozil's best, he wasn't bad at all. He wasn't sloppy on the ball. He did get shoved off a couple times, but like you said, I don't think it falls to him to be the guy leading the counterattack with his sprinting, because that's just not him. And I thought he was actually a really... I don't want to say he was a really positive influence, but he did his part, and he did a very good job, and that goal was fantastic. That's your prototypical Ozil goal.
Oh, the goal was so sexy. It was unbelievable.
And it segues into my other positive performer, although, again, I hesitate to call him a positive performer, but... I did just
average.
Yeah, we'll say average. Lacazette, this is kind of his second game where he's been frustrated, really frustrated in front of goal. I feel like he gets blocked more than any other person that takes shots.
Yeah, because he's quite small.
Yeah. But at the same time, his link-up play was, again, very, very good. It was that led to the Ozil assist, and I believe he almost got another one. I don't recall the exact circumstance, but I remember thinking there it was again. And plus, he's on my fantasy team, so I was hoping for that assist. But but I thought that, I mean...
Bringing real-life football into fantasy football there is Josh. Because as we know, everybody cares about your fantasy team.
Of course. The least interesting thing is someone else's fantasy team.
Yeah. No, but anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I kind of felt bad for him because... And I've been wanting
yeah,
him
I felt
to
sorry
be,
for him.
I've been wanting him to be more animated. And he was today, just perhaps not in the way I was hoping, because he was so frustrated that nobody could pick out his runs. But on the bright side, he was still making them. He was always making them. And like I said, his creation was good. He created actually the second most chances on the team. And yeah, he deserves credit for what he did. And then back to Jack Wilshere, I think he deserves credit as well, because he was in a game where we didn't know who we could rely on. He was reliable. I kind of likened it to Mohamed Elneny, and I don't mean that in a bad way, because we do kind of slate Elneny at times. But in a game like this, where it's all over the place, I'd kill for an Elneny, somebody that you just know isn't going to do anything stupid, may not do anything special, but having that reliability, and Wilshere had it. As my bonus, Theo Walcott made a really good turn. That turn, I thought...
He's turning his career around, I'll tell you that one for sure.
No, but you know, Welbeck didn't do much. I worry about him too and his influence. But Walcott, he looked really determined. He looked like he understood how terrible he was against West Ham and wanted to make up for it in all of 6 minutes, or however long he had on the pitch. And honestly, I don't feel like I'm out of line at all in saying if we came out against Crystal Palace swapped Iwobi for Walcott, why the hell not?
He said it. Oh,
why not?
I may have to edit this bit out.
You said you'd rather have 10 men than have 11 with Iwobi. I get that you were joking, but I'm going to take it seriously. I would say, well, why not try Walcott? Could it really get any worse? I mean, at the very least, if what we saw from Walcott in 5 minutes was what we can expect from him, an actual determination, then give him a shot. I mean, you were talking about how this is the best we can do. Who else would you rather see out there? And to me, that's scary. I don't want to think that there's nothing we can do about it. And right now, the best option we have is Walcott. And if that's our best option, then just let it be our best option and try it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what have you got to lose at this point is probably the general thinking on the somewhat depressing subject.
As a last gasp of optimism, we were down 2-0 and we ended up tying. And tying sucks. I really hate tying because I'd rather lose. No, let me clarify. I'd rather lose and have something to bitch about than or win and over the moon than have a tie where you're just like, well, I don't really know if I should be upset or happy or what. But, I mean, Liverpool were in fantastic form. We were absolutely not. And we managed to show some fight, even though it was very short-lived and left a lot to be desired. Those 5 minutes were thrilling. And such is the life of an Arsenal fan, where, again, you get 5 minutes of what Arsene Wenger believes he can do for 90, and it just feels like you're in heaven. But then you end up coming back down, which ends my optimism speech.
Mm. I mean, what do you think about the game management, having gone 3-2 up? I'm quite happy for the draw, especially you go 2-0 down and you take anything you can get, especially considering how Arsenal were playing at that point in time. But how do you think about the game management being 3-2 up with however long was left, what, 25 minutes or something like that?
I mean,
not great, really.
Yeah, that's tough because it's Liverpool. You can't just sit back and hunker down because that's never going to work, especially with how terrible it was. But I don't know. It kind of felt... I wish there was more urgency after we scored that third one. And there was an urgency all game, to be fair. It didn't... Even in the midst of our 5 minutes of wonderfulness, it's not like it was because we were just completely dominating. We just strung some good passes together and somebody finished it. I don't know. I mean, that's tough to say. Obviously, you always say you wish you could have seen more, but yeah.
I guess it's bittersweet, really, isn't it? The draw is nice considering the performance, I guess, but If Arsenal could have snuck the one, is snuck a word? Sneaked?
I use snuck, so go ahead and snuck. Use snuck.
If Arsenal had snuck out a one, still feels wrong, still doesn't sound right. if Arsenal had squeezed out the win, then that really would have been a brilliant result in a game that they didn't deserve to win, which is something that Arsenal struggled to do. And it's something that good teams and title-winning teams have always been able to do, is win games or pick up points that they're not meant to. And Arsenal had a chance to pick up three. And I think if you had put the Arsenal of old or the Sir Alex Ferguson Manchester United or the Jose Mourinho Chelsea in that situation with 3-2 with 25 minutes to go, they would have seen out that game and they would have won, even having played that badly for 60 of the previous 65 minutes, they still would have proceeded to win that game. And this current Arsenal team, with the mental deficiencies that they suffer from, didn't. And that is frustrating, I think, is probably the word for it.
Yeah, but I mean, like you said, it does... You do have to be somewhat pleased with getting ugly points like this. I mean, there have been times this season where Manchester City have had to settle for ugly points.
And yeah, late goals.
Obviously, it's higher stakes for them because they're in a bit of a different boat than we are. But
I don't know if there's any stakes left for Manchester City. They're so far in front that it just waltz through to the title now.
Yeah, it's all about the top four now.
Yes, obviously. And speaking of. Unless if there's any more details you want to talk about in this game.
I don't know what else I could.
Nope. I am too depressed to talk about anything else. Speaking of the top four race, Arsenal still in fifth. Burnley can go ahead of them. And I think Spurs will go ahead of them based on goal difference with a win as well.
Yeah.
But they are only a point behind Liverpool. They are now, however, 7 points behind United. And United have a game in hand. Are you getting a bit worried about that top four position, or are you still fairly, not necessarily confident, but I guess wary to Arsenal's abilities to go and put a run together in the latter half of the season?
Oh, man. Again, I'm an eternal optimist and believe that when it's needed, Arsenal will turn it on. Maybe I'm just blind, but I don't know. On the bright side, Burnley and Tottenham, I believe they play each other this weekend.
They do, yes.
They do, yeah.
At Burnley as well.
However, those are two teams that are behind us, so in the end, it doesn't make that much of a difference. We don't have to worry about the ones that are in front of us. And I don't know. I think the thing that really irks me about it is just that, I mean, we went to Stamford Bridge, we drew Chelsea, showed them to be completely beatable, and I still haven't been impressed by Manchester United, yet we're so far behind these teams. And, you know, for as much as I say we're going to turn it around, you just have to wonder when that's actually going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, after this weekend of fixtures, we'll be halfway through the season. United and Chelsea, if they win, will be 10 and 7 points clear, which, with Arsenal still to play Chelsea, they play Chelsea, that's the first game of their 2018. So, if they don't win that game, suddenly they're 7 points behind Chelsea and dropping more points. It's quite concerning, really. It becomes a gap that seems a little bit unassailable to haul back. And I think the title was always a bit of a pipe dream, really. It was one that I thought was possible if everything broke right. Which it never does. And if things went wrong for other teams. And obviously we've seen that everything's breaking right for one team, but that team isn't Arsenal. I think now the focus must shift to getting in that top four, and that's looking at primarily catching United and Chelsea and giving Arsenal, giving themselves the best chance of finishing in the qualification positions for the next season's Champions League. Whether they can do that or not is very much a question that I would not be prepared to answer, because given the mentality of this team, I have very little confidence in their ability to put a run of wins together when it really matters. I know they've done it in the past, but they failed to do it last year, and I fear that this could unravel again like it did last year, with the uncertainty over Wenger's future, the uncertainty over Ozil and Sanchez's future, and just the whole general atmosphere of the club begins to engulf everything and starts to become a distraction off the pitch that then infects and affects the performances on the pitch. Do you share the same worry?
Yeah, I do, because, I mean, when it gets to that point, you have to ask yourself who they have that's capable of standing their ground and turning it around. Mm. And the guys you've looked for in the past are Alexis Sanchez and maybe Lauren Koscielny, Mesut Ozil. But of those three, only Ozil's in a position to, and Alexis is not going to change. There's a chance Koscielny will, but I feel like as long as you have players, and I don't want to pin this all on Alexis because it's not all on him, but as long as you have players like that that have such an important role or had and already have that one foot out the door, I don't think you can expect too much to change. It's not a conducive atmosphere for people.
No, absolutely not.
Especially for a team that already has mental fragility. I mean, I always think to all the times where Alexis pointed out, oh, this team has no hunger. I think he said it once every year since he's been here. And, you know, it's just like, yeah, it is concerning, because if Wenger really doesn't plan on buying anybody in January and he's just going to keep the faith, then we're going to see the same things happening. And the same thing previously had been finishing in the top four, but the same thing this year would be finishing outside and missing the Champions League. And in the end, you couldn't be that surprised, because what did he actually change? The January window is a blessing. It's a chance for you to assess your problems, which we have plenty. And I get if he doesn't want to throw 6-7 new guys in there. I wouldn't want to see that happen. But one or two guys,
a bit of lease of life.
Yeah, and then you avoid the situation like you have with Lacazette, where you're scared to play him because, oh, he's not used to the big bad Premier League. Because then you get these guys in January that can play with the team for 3-4 months. They can get their feet underneath them. They can go into the preseason and come out next year looking like much closer to whatever Arsene Wenger wants to see than what Lacazette was. And I don't get why he doesn't utilize the January window more. It doesn't even have to be like a huge Nabil Fekir kind of guy. Just somebody that can, even somebody that can remind the players that what they're doing isn't good enough, that they had to be brought in because they weren't good enough. That's the kind of thing that can kickstart someone's talent. I mean, I used to talk all the time about how when Giroud was having his problems, to me the biggest problem was that Arsene Wenger never challenged him.
No competition.
No, he left him out there. Podolski came and went. I don't know why he never used him more. I'm not even going to say
go on.
But these were guys that...
Bentner?
But yeah.
Perhaps that's why Giroud thought he was so safe.
Exactly. And when you start feeling safe, you have no reason to get better. And that's not a knock on Giroud. That's just human nature. Why?
It's the culture of the club, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a culture of mediocrity. They're happy to settle for mediocrity.
Yeah, and if there's nothing pushing you to get better, then you're just going to progressively, you know, get better or worse, whatever happens to be your trajectory. But if you force somebody to either improve or lose their spot, all of a sudden that trajectory is going to change. They're going to, yeah, exactly. And I think that's another thing that I worry about now with Lacazette is he's not giving anybody the chance to really challenge him. And I mean, yeah, he takes him out in the 60th, 70th minute, but that's not because of any deficiency on Lacazette's part. That's just because that's what he does. Which, by the way, Lacazette played 90 minutes against Liverpool. How great was
I know.
That? How did I not mention that until now?
I agree completely with what you're saying. As a question, if I pose to you, let's say Arsenal, it's February the 1st, Arsenal have signed 3 players in the January transfer window and spent around £70 million. Obviously, this isn't going to happen, but let's just say that happens. Would you trust the 3 players that Arsene Wenger has signed, given his recent transfer recruitment?
Yeah, because, well, first of all, he's got Mislintat there already.
Yeah.
He might not have Sanye. I hope I'm saying that right.
That was a good effort, that. That was a very good effort.
I went into it with enthusiasm. I hope it came off
good.
Say
it confidently and you'll be fine.
And, you know, kind of like what I've already said earlier, I don't think it's even necessarily that you have the greatest players. It's just the fact that you're introducing new faces, because that's like a warning sign. And, yeah, Arsene Wenger hasn't been the best with transfers lately, but if he signs 3 players, chances are one will pan out, at least one. Maybe more. And I'd happily take that. I'd happily trust him to buy 3 players because, you know, again, they don't have to be game-changing players in their own right. They just have to shake up this mentality of we're all safe here. You know, Daddy Arsene Wenger is going to take care of us and make sure nobody comes and takes our jobs.
That's a harrowing image.
Yeah, as I was saying it, I was like, I shouldn't have done this.
Daddy, it's not living I wanted in this time of night.
I mean, isn't that what Gabriel Paulista said? He said he sees Arsene Wenger as a father figure.
Yeah, a father, not daddy figure, I think.
Okay, I should have picked my words better. I apologize.
Yeah, no problem. I don't share the same confidence in Wenger's ability to sign the right players in the transfer window. I just look at the players that he signed recently and none of them have vindicated their fee. So Mustafi...
How recently? Okay, that's what I was going to say.
So the last kind of 2 years or so. So Mustafi is a decent player. Is he a £35 million defender? No. Granit Xhaka is a decent player. Is he a £35 million midfielder? No. Lucas Perez, I don't even think Wenger wanted him in the first place, and he was gone a year later. Who else did we sign in that window? Is that it?
Why do I feel like there was... you need to talk about Lacazette and...
Yeah, Lacazette is, I guess, waiting to be proven. El Nene, again, I guess he was cheap, so it's all right, but is he anything special? Not really. Rob Holding, the jury's probably still out, though he was very cheap, so that's okay. I just think there are a lot of players that Arsene Wenger has signed who haven't lived up to their fee. And it's not that the fee's been very big. And maybe it's not that they lack talent. Maybe it's that he's not used them correctly and developed them very well.
Don't forget Takuma Asano.
Takuma Asano, yeah. Hakuna Matata. He's been... I think he scored.
He's been doing quite well, actually.
Has he? Oh, I thought he was doing terribly.
No, on loan he's doing pretty good.
Okay. Yeah. Japanese superstar.
Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just think you look at his recent transfer record, there are a lot of players that he signed who... They're just not very good, really. And I'm a bit worried about his ability to be able to highlight and acquire the right players. Now, maybe that's just luck that he hasn't signed the right players in recent years. Maybe it's just been unfortunate. Or maybe it's there's a deeper-rooted issue there. I'm not sure. But I'm not sure I would trust Wenger with a 200 million transfer kitty. Obviously, he's not going to get that anyway. But even if he were to get that, I'm not sure I would want it in Wenger's hands. Mislintat is a different question, and I don't quite know how much influence he would have at the moment, but we'll have to wait and see. But I'm not sure I'd trust Wenger, which is a bit of a shame, really.
Yeah, I get what you're saying about how none of these signings have been... I mean, none of them have really become these mainstay solutions that we've been begging for, yet some of them still can. And that is troubling. I think that Arsene Wenger just tries to be clever sometimes with his signings. I really do, and I still think he just outthinks himself. I mean, I think the one example I always go back to, and for the record, I think Mustafi is fantastic. I'm so glad that we signed him, and I think as of now he's probably our best defender, which sounds crazy. Well, I guess Monreal, but I still think Mustafi's pretty good. I just whenever. The window that we signed him, I remember because Mats Hummels was being sold, and he ended up being sold for $30 million to Bayern Munich, and we bought Mustafi for $35 million. Now, prior to seeing Mustafi play with Arsenal, I didn't understand that because they even asked Hummels what other teams were in the running if Arsenal, Chelsea. He said he never received an offer from any Premier League, or specifically from Arsenal. He never received an offer from them. And I thought, well, why not? Mats Hummels is one of the best defenders in the world, and we didn't even offer for him. Yet we do go off and spend more money on Mustafi on, I believe it was deadline day or just a few days before, which made me think that it was just that he never had any intention of buying a defender, and he wouldn't have if he hadn't been forced to. And
yeah, I mean, there were injuries to Gabriel and Mertesacker, weren't there?
Yeah, so he had to do something.
To force his hand somewhat.
Which, why he would even... I don't know. That little trade-off has always stuck in my head of why didn't you go after Mats Hummels? I don't care who you have. Mats Hummels is an upgrade. He's one of those players that is going to be an upgrade on anybody. And if he's available, you go after him.
And N'Golo Kanté and Granit Xhaka is the same example. Chelsea signed him in the same window. And I know Wenger said that he went in for Kanté and Chelsea basically just outbid him. But he also signed Xhaka in May, I think, was it? The signing was announced. So he clearly wanted Granit Xhaka and thought him worth £35 million or whatever the fee is. And
I will...
Yeah, go on. No, go on.
I understand that a bit more just because they are different players. And if Arsene Wenger wanted Xhaka's type over... Conte's type, but then again, he did bid for Conte, so clearly he wanted him.
It's more that Wenger thought that for £35 million, I think you're expecting a controlling, masterful midfielder. You're expecting a Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, I'm going to run the game midfielder. Someone who can win you Premier Leagues and you can build a team around. Now, Granit Xhaka is a perfectly decent, good player, but he's not the centerpiece midfielder that I think Wenger thought that he was going to be.
Well, think about it this way. I mean, he signed Elneny that January. He wasn't good enough. He signed Xhaka in the summer, and I'm not going to say he's not good enough, but a lot of people say that, so maybe he's going to get it right next time he signs a midfielder, which might be Leon Goretzka, maybe?
possibly. Though, knowing Wenger's track record, I won't trust Leon Goretzka. Even though I've seen him play Or rather, should I say, whenever I've seen him play, both for Schalke and Germany, he looks awesome.
Yeah.
So
he's, yeah.
Come on, Wenger, get the checkbook out. You don't even have to pay a transfer fee. This is your dream. he makes economical and footballing sense.
I could just see Arsene Wenger sitting there looking at Goretzka, thinking, "Well, I just picked up Klasnik last year from Schalke for free. If I do it the same with Goretzka, it would just be too obvious, and I do not want to be obvious." And then him passing it up, I just.
Well, I don't want to limit the opportunities that I can give Mohamed Elneny, so for that reason, Goretzka, I'm gonna have to pass. you might think that Abu Dhabi will finally be fit next year and bring him back. Oh, Wenger. I think we're beginning to ramble on, don't you?
Yeah, I don't even remember what the question was that started this, so.
No, neither can I. Let's wrap up there then. Is there anything else you want to say, Arsenal related or un-Arsenal related?
No, I mean we'll see what happens on the 28th. Crystal Palace should not be a problem.
Don't say things like that.
I know. I shouldn't.
Well, this will be the last time that you hear dulcet tones before Christmas, I suspect. So, Merry Christmas to all of you. Happy holidays to those who are American. And, yeah, thank you very much for listening. This has been episode 10, so we're now into double figures, so we're getting there, aren't we? We're getting there.
We're getting there.
Yeah, slowly but surely. And, yeah, check us out on Twitter. You can find us on Twitter. Just search for Pain in the Arsenal. You can find us online as well, paininthearsenal.com. You can see some of mine and Josh's work, as well as other people across the network. Give us a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever podcast distributor you are listening on. They always help, especially if they're positive. And also, let us know if you've got any questions for us. We'll always try and answer them on the podcast, just about anyway, won't we?
Yeah.
We'll do our best to answer them. So thank you very much for listening. We will probably be back with you next week after the Palace game, maybe after the West Brom game. Obviously scheduling is a little bit awkward around this time of year. Have a Merry Christmas. Have a Happy New Year if we do not speak to you before then. And thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.